You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
We're back. What a fascinating week of news. It must be the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. Now tonight, if you're bored and obviously not listening, why would you bother? But if you're bored and listless and you need company, like-minded rabble, well then join us tonight in Frankston. That's right, south of the Yarra. Yes, 3CR does broadcast south of the Yarra. And I've noticed most of our listeners are south of the Yarra. So that means they're very sensible people. So tonight, La Porchetta's, Nepean Highway, Frankston, 6:30 p.m. Come along if you're a listener to The Anarchist Will this week or any program on 3CR, if you're involved in the actions, or if you're interested in meeting like-minded people, turn up. There's only one stipulation. You pay for your own food and drinks. I've got a producer here who's pressing buttons, and you should see the look on their face when I mention the fact that people listen south of the Yarra. But what do you expect from people who come from North Northcote in Castlemaine? That's the great thing about radio. You can say what you like. She's shocked. All right, you don't come from Northcote. Now, a very important event this Sunday. Obviously, there's the Palestinian rally. But if that's when that finishes or if you're not going to it, the West Papuan gathering is occurring. Now, that's been going on for about 10 years, three times a year. The West Papuan Rent Collective is hosting the gathering. You're all welcome. Starts at 1 p.m. with lunch from 1 to 2 p.m. And then guest speakers to update you on what's happening with the West Papuan independence struggle. It seems to have fallen off the radar recently, but I'll talk more about that. That's at 838 Collins Street in Docklands. 838 Collins Street, Docklands. So come along. You're all invited. Usually goes from about 1 to 4 p.m. We have the West Papuan Community Choir. We have West Papuan speakers. We have an auction to raise money. And the important thing is if you can't come, we're having a little bit of trouble with the rent collective. Our members keep dying because they're elderly. And we've got a few vacancies. So if you want to join the rent collective, it's very simple. $1 a day. That's right. $1 a day. And means you'd have to forego 1.5 coffees a week at your local. Although some coffees now cost $7. So you just forego one coffee a week and you can join the West Papuan Rent Club. So come along, try before you buy, meet the activists, get involved, find out why 500,000 people have died in that struggle in the last 60 years, and find out Australia's interconnections with the West Papuan Indonesian military. So two events that I'm encouraging you to join. Now, we're about, the sacred cows have come in. They said they like West Papuan food. They're coming along because there's vegan, there's vegetarian, and there's meat. You choose. So they're coming along. They're coming along for the hay. They're interested in coming along. So, look, seriously, it's an exceptionally important initiative. It's been going for over almost 11 years. We need your support. So come along on the 31st of August. That's Sunday. Welcome to Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast. Go to 3cr.org.au, Anarchist World This Week. Hundreds, if not thousands, of podcasts. You could lose yourself for at least 6 months and nobody would know you're missing. My name's Joseph Toscano. I'm hosting today's program. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, no, it's nothing of what's happening in the world today. It's a very simple concept. Anarchos without rulers. It's a society without rulers, not without rules. It's based on two basic principles. It's about overcoming inequalities of power and wealth, because it's inequalities in power and wealth which give rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people, as we see around the globe today, where people have been sacrificed, you know, for ridiculous notions. So, if you're involved in the struggle to devolve power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good, well, whether you like it or not, you're an anarchist. Now, I'm going to talk about something that everybody talks about, but we've been talking about for at least a decade, maybe over a decade, on the Anarchist World This Week. And you may be bored with it, but I think it's essential. I'm going to talk about public housing, everybody's business. Now, the Anarchist Media Institute has been involved in the public housing struggle now for over a decade. Because what we've seen, especially in Victoria, is the privatisation of the public housing sector. But it's been done in such a manner that most people, even activists and even radical activists, don't seem to be aware of what's happening. Now, publicly housing is publicly owned and publicly managed. But what we've seen over the last almost 15 years is the rise and rise and rise, a little bit of government assistance, of the community sociable and affordable housing sector. Now, these are private organisations, some for profit, some not for profit. And they now run the lion's share of what is laughingly described as public housing. And those public housing estates and homes, which were spot purchased across the state in the 1980s and 1990s, are now on the verge of becoming property for the community social and affordable housing sector. And those public housing estates, which are going to be demolished and replaced, are not going to be replaced by public housing, which gives the tenant security of tenure, but they're going to be replaced by community social and affordable housing. Now, the difference between public housing and social and community and affordable housing is the fact that you can live all your life in public housing in the same unit or the same house as long as you pay 25% of your income as rent and as long as you're not some type of dickhead. So you've got security. Now, security is not just about having a roof over your head. Housing security is having the ability to use the same networks, to use the same shops, to use the same entertainment facilities, to use the same sporting clubs. And if you've got children, it grounds them in that particular community and allows them to form lasting friendships, which in many cases last a lifetime. Now, public housing, everybody's business, which I'm the convener of, our policy is exceptionally simple. Using the money which is raised through the imposition of stamp duty when people purchase a house to be funneled into public housing. And if you did that, you could finance enough public housing, whether it's built or spot purchased, for over 100,000 Victorians a year. And the same could happen in any other state in the Federation, any other state. But what we see is that stamp duty revenue is used for other state, you know, options like digging holes. So what's important is that everybody seems to have removed the word public housing from their vocabulary. Now, we've seen the federal government, let's not remember the Prime Minister of Australia, Mr Albanese, was brought up in public housing by a single parent who relied on a social security benefit, who wasn't forced to go out to work when he turned 8, who benefited from a 3 education in the tertiary sector and benefited from the security of tenure. Now, when Mr Albanese was first elected Prime Minister 4 years ago, I heard him use the word public housing on a number of occasions, but within a few months, he had been re-educated in terms of using words like community, social and affordable housing. Now, most of the initiatives that we see today in terms of increasing housing availability is about assisting, using federal money or state money, taxpayers' money, to basically bolster and assist the private sector. And that's the dilemma. We could solve the housing crisis tomorrow in this country if money which was raised by the states by the imposition of stamp duty on the purchase of a home was utilised to create public housing. Because public housing is not just for people in extreme circumstances in terms of their housing requirements. It should be available to anybody in the community who has not got the ability or the desire to enter the private housing market. See, I'll give you a little example. And I know it's very simple, and that's the reason why nobody thinks about it. Well, people in authority don't think about it. It's very simple. You increase public housing stocks through building or through spot purchasing. As you increase public housing stocks, the need for private rental diminishes. As the need for private rental diminishes, rents decrease. As rents decrease, people who use real estate as an investment opportunity will find that they're losing money. They will then sell at the lower end of the market. This increases housing supply for people who want to enter the private housing market. At the same time, having security of tenure means that children who grow up in those circumstances are less likely to find themselves, drifting into a life of criminal activity because of the stability which they find themselves in. So it's a win-win situation. But unfortunately, in 2025, the concept of the state, whether at the state level or the federal level, providing essential services and necessities to the public is no longer politically palatable. So it's up to people like us to ensure the word public is not used to describe second-rate housing, second-rate healthcare, second-rate infrastructure, but the word public is used in its literal term, which is for all of us, not just a few. Now, until we are able to utilise the language to promote our ideas, nothing is going to change. And all we are going to see is more and more taxpayers' funds being funneled into the private sector. That's why we never see a decrease in housing prices. We never see a decrease in rents. We never see enough housing, irrespective of, changes to legislation in terms of, removing regulations in terms of building. We just don't see it. So if you are interested in the public housing struggle, and you do live in Melbourne and possibly visit Melbourne occasionally, every Thursday between midday and 1 p.m, a small group of us holds a vigil on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House, promoting the concept of public housing. Now, it's fascinating. Now, public housing, everybody's business, was invited to submit a submission to the current Legislative Council inquiry. And as the convener of Public Housing, Everybody's Business, I was invited to give a presentation. Now, guess what? 48 hours before my date with the Legislative Council, that legislation was rescinded. And it's what happens constantly, I've been told, is that people who have a different alternative, a different viewpoint in terms of the importance of public housing, will find themselves removed from the debate. Now, we will not be removed from the debate. We will continue to promote public housing as a significant mechanism by which to ensure housing security for an increasing number of Australians who find it impossible because the housing sector has been turned into an investment market to put a roof over their heads. Listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Let's move on. Bye-bye, orbital NASA satellites. You see, the buffoon in Washington, I'm not going to mention his name, Buffalini, the man who thinks he's, you know, Mussolini. The buffoon. And guess what the buffoon's done lately? Well, he keeps, you know, firing people because he doesn't like the message. So you fire that particular person and get another messenger who's willing to bend the facts to suit your particular jaundiced view of reality. The buffoon's jaundiced. Now, guess what he's done? Now, you know, and I know, the climate emergency doesn't exist as far as the buffoon is concerned. That's why they talk about dig, baby, dig. And that's why they've rescinded all that legislation which came into place during the Obama-Biden era to try to address the climate emergency. And that's why, you know, if you see statistics and facts that don't suit you, you just don't ignore them. You ignore them or you change them. Now, NASA had two orbital satellites in the sky. It's got hundreds. And their job was to quantify greenhouse emissions. And guess what's happened in the last few weeks? They have been decommissioned by the buffoon because he's not happy with the fact that the greenhouse emission readings are increasing. So if you can get rid of the mechanism via which to read increasing greenhouse emissions, nobody needs to worry about them, do they? What a load of garbage. What a load of garbage. You don't like what the Treasury official tells you, you change them. You don't like what the director of the CIA tells you regarding the buster bombs on Iran, change them. What an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in. See, and this is it, isn't it? This is what anarchism is all about. It's about highlighting the more power you invest in an individual or a clique, the greater the damage that can be inflicted on the population at large. Initially, you may find people like the buffoon getting the adulation they require. But the reality is that facts are facts. And you can shoot the messenger. You could not collect the facts, but facts are facts. Nature doesn't care. Doesn't care about sovereign borders. Doesn't care whether we collect information or not. Doesn't care if we pray to the gods to prevent the climate emergency. It just keeps on going. So, all the buffoonites out there, let's hope your eyes will open in the near future. If they don't blame us. Listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, the end of the year is coming up, and whether you're religious or not, we tend to exchange gifts, especially with the little ones. You know, you've got kids or grandkids, you're looking for that wonderful gift that they will possibly destroy within 48 hours. So you're looking for something new. Now, I am going to spruik the latest children's toy, which I describe as legalised child abuse. Now, if I started stalking kiddies, I deserve everything I get legally. It's that simple, isn't it? But we now have legalised child abuse, courtesy of the corporate world. And I'm not talking about what's been happening in childcare centres. I'm talking about something even more difficult to quantify. Because the new toy on the block, and remember there's always a new toy on the block at the end of the year in order to part you from your cash or, you know, cyber coin. The new toy in the block is the AI, the artificial intelligence children's toy. You know, you buy a little kitty, an AI toy, and it can interact with them. Whether they're one, whether they're two, whether they're six, whether they're eight. You've got this wonderful interaction between this artificially intelligent toy and your little kitty. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? And there's only one problem. Well, there's a few problems, but I'm not going to go into that. But there is one major problem, which I'm sure all those people who've got, you know, Hello Google, whatever it's called, in their houses don't seem to realise. That every interaction, every child's like and dislike, all filters up to the cloud. What you're doing is you're providing detailed information about your child to an AI toy, which then transmit the information to the cloud, which is then used to put pressure on you to buy more shit. Think about it. Why don't you get them a wooden jigsaw puzzle? Don't waste your money on all those AI-generated toys, all that plastic garbage that's out there, all that stuff that lasts 2 minutes. Maybe get them something which they're going to need their hands to manipulate, and maybe something that's not actually attached to some corporation, some, you know, mega giant corporation which is out there basically to make a buck out of the legalised child abuse which you have introduced your child to. I know it sounds unbelievable, but the great thing about living at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century is the unbelievable has become believable. You listen to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Isn't it convenient? It's so convenient. After some of the largest mass demonstrations by concerned Australians on Sunday regarding the atrocities that are carried out in Gaza on a daily basis, which would result in the death of over 62,000 people, 20,000 of which are children. All of a sudden, the Albanese Labor government kicks out the Iranian ambassador. First ambassador to be kicked out since World War II. Isn't it nice? Isn't it nice to see them make this? Now, ASIO, same crowd which were responsible for the dismissal of the Whitlam-led Labor government, but that was 50 years ago, so we don't talk about that, has got all this information which makes them believe that Iran was responsible for some of the attacks on synagogues. Two, to be in fact. I just thought it was very convenient. Here we have this huge mass movement developing. Australians who are horrified by the atrocities they see on a daily basis. Totally horrified. now been derailed by these beliefs of the ASIO and a Labor-led government that Iran was behind some of these attacks last year. Now, they could have been. I'm not saying they weren't, and most likely they were. But this is not the central issue facing us today. We are in bed with mass murderers, the Israeli state. We are in bed with people who are using famine as a mechanism by which to promote their ideological wet dreams. We are in bed with people who are willing to destroy hospitals and mosques and churches and schools and community infrastructure to pursue their ideological gains. Now, although the war between Russia and Ukraine has more than its fair share of atrocities, the fact is, if the Russians were doing to the Ukrainians what the Israelis are doing to the Gazans and the people living in the West Bank, there would be resolution after resolution after resolution in the Security Council. Every time any resolution is raised in the Security Council regarding the situation in Gaza and the West Bank, it is blocked by the United States of America. So the key is not to be diverted. This is a sideshow. I'm going to give ASIO the benefit of the doubt and say they've got their information correct. Now, if it's good enough for the gander, it's good enough for the geese, or it's the other way, or the goose, or it's the other way around. Isn't it time that we expelled the Israeli ambassador from this country? It's all very well expelling the Iranian ambassador, but let's expel the, and I've called for this for over a year, expel the Israeli ambassador to show as a nation how we feel about the horrors which are occurring in Gaza as I speak. I'd like to congratulate all those people who came out on the streets. Don't be derailed by the avalanche of publicity we've seen over the last 48 hours regarding the horrors that the Iranians have inflicted, you know, in Australia. Don't be, it's just a little bit too convenient. A little bit too convenient. A little bit of pressure placed on the Israeli government and, hey, presto, it's the Iranians' fault again. Now, it'd be nice to look at their information, but obviously it's all kept in secret. We have to have a belief in they've done the right thing. So think about it. The carnage continues. We continue to be the friends of mass murderers. We continue to be the friends of an apartheid system. We continue to be the friends of genocide. But we're not willing to do very much about it as a government. So once again, like the Vietnam War and like the Iraq invasion, it's up to the people of this country to continue to take to the streets irrespective of the propaganda war which has been waged by the Israeli state in attempts to actually hide their barbarity.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can leave messages at 0439 395 489. Now, you see, the buffoon, Buffalini, the buffoon in Washington, is an interesting character because of how he can get enemies to become friends. Now, see, the United States of America thinks the world needs it. And I've got a little bit of sympathy for those small businesses that are trying to export shit to the US of A, who now find it impossible through Australia Post. But the fact is, we don't need them. The world does not need the United States of America. It doesn't need them. We will lose nothing by cutting our ties with them. Lose nothing at all, especially our economic ties. As I've said on this program before, if you want to hurt the buffoon and the buffonettes and the buffalini, it's very simple. Don't buy their shit. Oh, you're kidding. You don't want me to go to a United States franchise for my hamburger? Well, you do have options. Oh, you don't want me to go on a pay TV station which is owned by a US corporation? You do have options. Oh, you don't want me to use eBay? You do have options. Facebook, Google, the list goes on and on. We all have options in life, and especially how to divest ourselves of the little income we have. And the fact is that the fewer people buy their shit, the more pressure is placed on them. And see, you see, the buffoon's very interesting because he's done something which I have not seen before. And I've been around a long time, over seven decades. We are now seeing a realignment of superpowers in the world today. And we're seeing an increasing alliance between India, Russia and China. Now, India and China have been mortal enemies for decades. We just recently will be seeing the Indian Prime Minister go on a trip to Russia. We're seeing increasing trade and increasing cooperation between these three superpowers. And it's fascinating how the United States of America is such a great expert at alienating not only its enemies, but also its friends. And the fact is, we do have options. Everybody talks about the importance of AUKUS. Well, we could have gone with a French nuclear submarine, but Morrison fought otherwise. I mean, now that we've paid a little down payment on the AUKUS submarines, the nuclear submarines, we're being asked to actually sign a piece of paper saying that we will come to the defence of American interests anywhere in the world. And that the AUKUS nuclear submarines will actually be part and parcel of the United States military-industrial complex. And that they will have the final say on where the missiles are pointed at. And if you think I'm kidding, just listen to the shit that's coming out of the buffoon and his supporters' mouth. Just extraordinary. Now, Indian people are very, very proud people. And I have noticed over the last 4 to 6 weeks, especially after the Pakistan-Indian exchange of firepower, that India is talking more about self-reliance, not just self-reliance in terms of the economy, but self-reliance in terms of its military equipment. And it's put out feelers to China and has increased its contacts with Russia. Courtesy of the buffoon's inability to understand the world doesn't need the United States of America. We really don't need them. And the sooner they realise that, the better off we're all going to be. That's not to say that there aren't good people fighting in the United States of America. Across the country, there are people fighting what's happening. Some in the courts, many on the streets. And we support what they are doing. But the fact is, as we saw in Mussolini's Italy and Franco's Spain, Hitler's Germany, that when a small clique has total control of the state, they can and do, through their control of the state apparatus, shift public opinion and create situations which are a danger to so many people who don't toe the right line in those societies. And we are seeing that on a daily basis. Now, obviously, China is an authoritarian state ruled with a Communist Party. You know, it's obvious. Same in Russia. To a lesser degree in India. But the fact is that what we are seeing is a total transformation of the United States of America. Now, I was very interested in the buffoon's liking of the dear leader in North Korea. You see, there are things that are interesting. Because you see, when somebody is a megalomaniac, you like to have your kiddies take over. We have seen this in the Philippines with the Marcoses. We see it in Indonesia, where it's only a handful of families that will ever have the ability to be the president. And we saw this with the former president, who elevated his son to deputy president in the current administration. And I can see, you know, the old buffoon having a chat to the young buffoon down in North Korea, thinking, how have you engineered to have three generations of your family rule North Korea with an iron fist? And I can see his love for the mechanisms that are used, and I can actually see us looking at a buffoon dynasty in the United States of America. No wonder he's so attracted to the dear leader. Ah, well, all we can do is comment, COMMENT. But I keep saying to people, why did the Soviet Empire collapse in 1989? It basically collapsed because it had no credibility whatsoever among the people it exercised authority over. And all they needed was an excuse, and it came crumbling down. See, it's the same. And what was one of the main tactics you use when you find yourself totally oppressed? Comedy, humour, degradation of the leadership is a popular pastime. So I encourage people, you may feel powerless in terms of changing the United States direction or even the direction of the government of the country you live in, as we see with the massive pro-Palestinian demonstrations in this country. But the fact is, humour is a very effective weapon in terms of destroying the credibility of those who think it's their God-given right to rule us. Let's move on. Something closer to our shores, which I am sure, sorry for the tautology there, something close to our shores. Now, I don't know if you know that currently the Australian Armed Forces are involved in a joint military operation with the Indonesian Armed Forces called Operation Garuda. Now, I've been a great supporter of the West Papuan independence struggle for decades, and I've been the convener of the West Papuan Office Rent Collective now for 12 years. I think it's the 12th year. And the fact is that although we see the atrocities on a daily basis, what's occurring in the West Bank and Gaza, and to a lesser extent even in Sudan, we don't have much attention focused on the atrocities that are occurring in West Papua as I speak. This is a province which was incorporated into the Indonesian archipelago. I think it was 1967, forcibly incorporated. And since then, we have seen human right abuse over human right abuse, which has led to the deaths of over 500,000 people. Some directly, some indirectly, as a result of Indonesian colonisation and a transmigration movement which removes the original inhabitants from the land and gives away their land to poor Indonesians who are brought across to cultivate that land. And the West Papuan independence movement is still alive. It has both a political faction and an armed faction in the mountains. And occasionally you hear about the activities of the armed faction, and occasionally you hear about the activities of the Indonesian military. And let's not forget that West Papua is one of the richest countries on the planet. It's got more gold than any other sovereign nation state on the planet. It has virgin forests which act as a sink to soak up carbon which has been removed rapidly by logging companies and replaced with palm oil plantations. It has an incredibly diverse range of fisheries, fish stock. And the fact is West Papua can operate as a green country in terms of decreasing greenhouse emissions and helping to decrease greenhouse excesses from other sovereign nation states. Now, the Australian governments and the Australian Armed Forces have been instrumental in both training Indonesian troops in Australia in counterinsurgency tactics, in providing armaments, and in supporting the Indonesian government's destruction of West Papua. I'll give you an example how closely aligned both the government and opposition are in this situation. I think about a decade ago, a West Papuan activist was killed in a bicycle accident in Darwin. Nothing suspicious. An unfortunate accident. And a senator... at that stage, he's no longer in the Senate, a man is dying, raised a condolence motion in the Senate, which is pretty standard. But the condolence motion was howled down because the word West Papua was used in the motion. Now, we've seen the Iranian ambassador kicked out of Australia because Asia believes it has found a link between two arson attacks in Australia and the Iranian military. But what happens as far as Indonesia and the fact that we have Indonesian spies in this country, spying on West Papuan refugees and putting pressure on West Papuan activists in a variety of ways? Do we see any charges in terms of foreign interference, let alone the expulsion of the Indonesian ambassador? Of course not. So the West Papuan office was established over 11 years ago at 838 Collins Street in Docklands in Melbourne. It is basically the only significant functioning West Papuan independence office in the world. It's not financed by corporations or people in power. The West Papuan office rent is paid by a collective of people, basically people on social security benefits and low wages and retirees, not the rich and powerful, because they could buy an office for the West Papuan independence movement tomorrow, which we can't. And we raise the rent through this collective process. But collectives have a habit of people changing their minds or people dying. And currently with the West Papuan Rent Collective, we've got a deficiency. which we need to overcome, which means we need more members to become part of the West Papuan rent collective. And it's normally $1 a day. Considering the cost of a cup of coffee in a restaurant today in a major capital city means you'd have to forego maybe 1.25 cup of coffees a week in your local restaurant. Not a big thing. You can contribute weekly, you can contribute monthly. We don't keep records, you're given a bank account, you put the money in, all that money is used to pay the rent. As the convener of the West Papuan Rent Collective, I guarantee that every cent that's gone into that rent collective has gone to pay the rent for the West Papuan office. Unlike shadowy organisations, the West Papuan office is a totally open office. And 3 or 4 times a year, they organise an open day for West Papuan Rent Collective members and also people who are interested in becoming members or people who are interested in giving a one-off donation. And the next open day for the West Papuan office in Melbourne at 838 Collins Street, Docklands, will be this Sunday, the 31st of August. Now, I know many people go to the Palestinian demonstrations, which are held every Sunday, but this office has now been open for over 11 years, long before the genocide began in Palestine. So if you can make it, activities occur from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. this Sunday, the 31st of August. There's no entry, there's no cover charge. Lunch from 1 till 2. Then a bevy of speakers who will talk about the situation in West Papua today and give some historical background as well. Around 3 o'clock there's an auction to raise money for the West Papuan Rent Collective to pay the rent. There are many interesting items which have been donated. Everything is donated, all right? Everything is donated. You know, no member of the West Papuan Rent Collective gets a cent. And that's the great thing about the West Papuan Rent Collective. It is based on people donating income to ensure the West Papuan independence struggle has some type of public face in this country. And it can be used, the office is used to generate support for the West Papuan independence struggle, not just at a local level, but an international level. So open invitation to each and every listener. And the more that are there, the better. You don't have to join. There'll be no pressure on you to join the West Papuan Rent Collective. You can go upstairs and look at the office, 838 Collins Street, Docklands. When you get to 838, go round the back. That's where the meeting room is. That's where lunch is held. That's where the auction will be. And at the end of the process at around 4 p.m. or before 4 p.m, the West Papuan Community Choir will be singing. Now, everybody, every single person involved in the West Papuan office are volunteers. Everybody in the West Papuan Rent Collective is a volunteer. Nobody gets paid for anything. It's volunteer labour. And you will not see that in many organisations in this country today. So without your support, we may find ourselves in the situation of grinding to a halt. And that's why we have these information days, these gatherings every 3 to 4 months in the West Papuan office to keep the idea of West Papuan independence alive. Now, there are many horrible things happening in the world today. We talk about them constantly. The conflict in Sudan, where 25 million people now face famine conditions. The conflict in the West Bank and Gaza. The conflict between Ukraine and Russia. the grinding poverty in so many parts of the world. But the fact is that people do fight back. And they do to create, they do things to create that new world in their hearts. And the thing about West Papua is it's not in the Middle East 10,000 kilometres away. And it's not in the Ukraine, which I think is about 10, 12,000 kilometres away. The West Papuan independence struggle is occurring 70 kilometres from the Australian coastline. 70 kilometres. Think about it. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Open invitation, West Papuan Rent Collective Gathering, this Sunday, the 31st of August, 1pm to 4pm, lunch from 1 to 2pm, speakers 2 to 3pm, auction at 3pm, and around 3:30, 4pm, the West Papuan Community Choir. Come and join us. Come and meet activists who've been involved in this struggle for, I know, decades and decades and decades. And that's the thing about independence struggles. They don't go away. Whether it's in Palestine, whether it's in West Papua, independence struggles never go away until that problem is resolved to the satisfaction of those people struggling for their independence. Now, let's move on. How convenient, I keep saying, how convenient. Let's move on. Productivity Commission. Yes, I thought I'd comment on the Productivity Commission. Now, the first thing is I didn't get an invitation. I don't know why a man of my intellectual and economic credibility didn't get an invitation, but I think it's a little bit like maybe it's been lost. It's gone in the dump box, my email dump box, who knows, but I didn't get an invitation. But I did notice something which really wasn't raised in the productivity roundup, whatever we call it, productivity, knees up Mother Brown extravaganza. Productivity, you see, one thing which was not raised as a significant issue at the oval table, not the round table, was the fact that corporatisation destroys productivity. Think about it. If you have an economy which is dominated by a small number of corporations, then the ability of new entities to rise and be effective in that particular economic sphere are nil. And if by some chance they can kind of get their hands, their fingers on the parapet, they'll be bought out. So in many regards, you do not get increased productivity in a society where corporations dominate economic activity. And it's all very well talking about removing regulations as far as construction is concerned, some, you know, minimal taxation reform. But the major issue which faces Australia is the fact that corporatisation destroys the ability in a capitalist marketplace of new entrants to become dominant players in that sphere of activity. I'll give you an example. It's a simple example. Even an idiot like me can work this out. Now, you know there are three major players in the grocery business in this country. And I'm not talking about your disappeared corner shop, but three major players. There's Coles, there's Woolworths, and there's Aldi. Now, Aldi is a German chain. It's been here for about 20 years, put a lot of effort and energy into the place. It now has about 12% of market share as far as grocery sales are concerned. Now, last year, there was another major German supermarket chain which was interested in entering the marketplace in Australia. It appointed a CEO, did everything, ready to go, and at the last minute, its board aborted the idea because they said to themselves, What's the point of entering a corporatised space when our ability to expand, irrespective of the amount of resources we put into this country, are not going to give us a dividend? And that's the problem. If you've got a startup which looks like it's going to succeed, the best thing you can do today in a corporatised field, economic field, is to sell that startup to that corporation, which will either expand it or kill it. So the ability to increase productivity in a capitalist society, in a private investment for private profit society, is interlinked with the ability of that startup to grow. And that's why we see so many startups in this country move to other countries, because their ability to grow and increase productivity is stymied by a lack of competition. And although we have an Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, the fact is, if you don't have the legislative teeth to actually regulate the space, you're ineffective. So we now have an economy which is dominated by extremely reduced number of players. And irrespective of what we attempt to do to increase productivity, it'll be stillborn before we start. So maybe somebody at the Oval Table brought it up. I doubt it. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. You can leave messages 0439 395 489. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. YouTube, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. JosephToscano.com. There's stuff everywhere. Come and join us. See you tonight at Frankston. See you on Sunday, 838 Collins Street, for the West Papuan Independence Gathering. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week, courtesy of the Community Radio Network, courtesy of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano. You got any complaints? Tell somebody else. I don't care. Thank you once again for listening to us, courtesy of your local community radio station. And if your community radio station doesn't broadcast The Anarchist World This Week, go up to the CEO and say, why don't you broadcast The Anarchist World This Week? You've got that capacity. Do it now. Listen in to The Anarchist World This Week, next week on your local community radio station.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.